chapter 11, book of Ezekiel, chapter 11. Read verses 14 through verse 16. Again, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, thy brethren, even thy brethren, the men of thy kindred, and all the house of Israel, holy are they unto whom the inhabitants of Jerusalem have said, Get you far from the Lord, unto us in this land given in possession. Therefore thus saith the Lord God, Although I have cast them far off among the heathen, and although I have scattered them among the countries, yet will I be to them as a little sanctuary in the countries where they shall come. Ezekiel was a contemporary to Jeremiah. They both exercised their ministry before and during the Babylonian captivity. We read of the kingdom going into captivity in 2 Kings chapter 24. And we see that the vessels of the temple were stripped away and 10,000 people were carried into Babylon. We see from verse 15 of our text that these that were being carried away into Babylon were looked upon with scorn and mocked by their brethren, the ones who were left behind, which of course would simply add to their misery. Ezekiel was one of those who had been carried away into Babylon, again some 800 miles away. Jeremiah would have preached God's message to those Jews who were left behind, and Ezekiel again preached to those who were carried into captivity. Ezekiel's ministry, the purpose of it, he was to inspire, he was to strengthen those who had been taken from their homeland, away from their loved ones, away from their familiar surroundings into captivity. He was to do this by preaching to them. We find throughout the book, Thus saith the Lord, 206 times, and the words, the word of the Lord came unto me, we find that 49 times. And when we see the word of the Lord came unto me, that's a new message that Ezekiel is preaching, and we see that that phrase occurs 49 times in the book. But we see, what we want to look at tonight is verse 16. We've preached from this verse in the past. It's one of my favorite verses. It's a verse that is of great encouragement. It's a verse that reminds us of the greatness of God. It's a verse that reminds us of the sovereignty of God. It's a verse that basically says that God is still God. And because of your own sin, Judah desperately needed the direct intervention of God. They desperately needed a reminder of who God was. So in our text, the Lord gives Ezekiel a message that he was to declare. We see that in verse 14, and then we read in verse 16, Thus saith the Lord. And part of that message that Ezekiel is going to preach is verse 16. Again, it's a verse that reminds us of God's existence, God's sufficiency, God's grace, God's mercy, His love, His faithfulness. They are words of great comfort. They are words of great hope. They are words that provide assurance to all of God's people. They are timeless words for God's people. They are applicable to you and I in the times in which we live, and they'll be applicable tomorrow. They'll be applicable in the future. And so we want to speak tonight on the subject of there is always God. There is always God. No matter what happens, there is always God. We want to notice, first of all, the places where God's people may find themselves. All through the Scriptures, we see God's people in a wide variety of places. We see them in a wide variety of situations, a wide variety of circumstances. And some of those places, they're there for a very lengthy period of time. Some of those situations and circumstances, they're there for a very lengthy time. Other times, they're there for a very short time. And all these places and all these situations, they're all subject to sudden change. They can change in a moment. In verse 16, with reference to His people's captivity, God makes two statements concerning their captivity. He says, I have cast them far off among the heathen, and I have scattered them among the countries. Those two statements, again, speak of Babylonian captivity. But those two statements are indicative of several facts and just teach us the places where we can find ourselves at any given time. First of all, God's people may find themselves under the chastisement of the Lord. We see, I have cast them off far among the heathen. I have scattered them among the countries. Way back in the book of Deuteronomy, God threatened Israel, or promised Israel, if they as a nation sinned against Him, they would be scattered among all the other nations, and that they would be cast off among the heathen. Ezekiel, up to this point in the book, had reminded Judah that they had sinned, that they had rebelled against God. Again, remember, Ezekiel prophesied before and during the Babylonian captivity. And before the captivity, he reminded them over and over that they had sinned and they had rebelled against God. And then once they were in captivity, he reminded them again that they had sinned, they had rebelled against God, and that they were under the chastisement of the Lord. The writer of Hebrews, in Hebrews chapter 12, says that God as a father chastens His children. Now Judah refused over and over and over the message of God's prophets. They had continually ignored God. They had forsaken the ways of God. They were going further and further and further from God. They were dismissing God from all their thoughts. They were dismissing God from their lives. They were putting human ideas, pagan philosophies, in the place of God. They had busied themselves in other pursuits. They very rarely took the Word of God or the message of God seriously. They became desensitized to the things of God, and as a result, they find themselves under the chastening hand of God. And we hear God say, I have cast them off far among the heathen. I have scattered them among the countries. There are those of God's people today, because of their sin, because of their rebellion, they find themselves under the chastening hand of God. One of the most scary things is to be under the chastening hand of God and not even recognize it. That is a frightful, frightful thing. Because as you read there in Hebrews chapter 12, there's chastening, there's scourging. That's another degree of chastening. So God's people can find themselves, and we all do, we can find ourselves under the chastening hand of God. These two statements, again, they speak of the fact that God's people may find themselves in places, they may find themselves in times of great difficulty. Again, far off among the heathen, scattered among the countries. That speaks of difficulty. That speaks of tremendous strain. That speaks of struggles. That speaks of hassles. That speaks of great distress. It speaks of complications. All life is complicated when you're cast off amongst the heathen and when you're scattered throughout the countries. Everything becomes complicated. We see it speaks of inconvenience. It speaks of trouble. It speaks of agitation. To be amongst the heathen, to be away from your homeland, amongst the heathen, to be away from your homeland, amongst the other countries. All these things would be very, very difficult. So God's people can find themselves in places of difficulty. They can be there for a long time. You can be there for a lifetime. You can be there for a day. You can be there for 10 minutes. And again, it can change at any moment. It can change at any second. But every one of us will find ourselves and have found ourselves in times and places of great difficulty. We see also these two statements speak of the fact that God's people can find themselves in places and times of opposition. Again, far off among the heathen, scattered among the countries. That speaks of places, and that speaks of times of adversaries. The heathen are adversaries. In those other countries, we're enemies. It speaks of hostility, and it speaks of that which is unacceptable and undesirable. No one wants to be cast off amongst the heathen. You don't want to be scattered amongst the countries. But again, we can find ourselves in places of opposition. We also see that God's people may find themselves in places and times of defeat. Those two statements again, cast off among the heathen, scattered amongst the countries, speak of defeat, speaks of persecution. And we will find ourselves in places where we are conquered. We'll find ourselves when we are trounced by the enemy and we are under the influence of an enemy power, and that will greatly affect your life. When you come under the influence of an enemy power, that will have a huge effect upon your life. And we see we have times when this is so. We find ourselves in these places. We find ourselves in these times. God's people may also find themselves in places and times of great loneliness. Again, Babylon is some 800 miles away from their homeland, away from their loved ones, taken from their homes, taken from their families, taken from their friends, taken from their employments, taken from their familiar surroundings. I'm sure it got lonely at times. And God's people will find themselves in places and times of loneliness. It also speaks of the fact that we may find ourselves in places and times of great disappointment. The truth is, and in Jeremiah chapter 10, I believe it is, speaks of the fact that really the ones who were left behind were worse off than the ones carried into Babylon, the parable of the good figs and the bad figs. But that's another message. But in these two statements, far off among the heathen, scattered among the countries, speaks of disappointment, speaks of displeasure, it speaks of dissatisfaction. Those who were carried into Babylon, that's not what they had envisioned for their life. I mean, how many people you hear say, well, this isn't what I planned. Well, how many people's lives work out as you planned? You're not in control. You can plan all you want to, but you're not in control. And I'm sure those who were carried off into Babylon, they thought, well, this sure isn't what I was expecting. This sure isn't what I had envisioned as a young person. I didn't know this was going to happen. And through the 70 years of captivity, these captives faced many disappointments. And we can find ourselves in those places. We can find ourselves in those times. We also may find ourselves in times of exposure to that which is contrary to God. They were carried off. They were scattered. They were carried off into the heathen. They were scattered amongst the countries. And we read there in the book of Daniel that there was an all-out effort to get the captives to conform to the ways of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar had a program. Nebuchadnezzar had an agenda to develop an appetite in these Jews for Babylonian culture. And the devil today has a plan. He has an agenda to develop the appetite of God's people for the culture of the world. And he's done a very, very good job at it, because most of God's people have a strong appetite for the culture of this world. He sought to fill their minds with Babylonian philosophy. He sought to fill their minds with the religion of Babylon. He sought to reprogram their thinking. He aimed at captivating their thinking, their ways, their captivating them with the thinking and the ways and the idols and the ambitions and the opinions of Babylon. And we find ourselves in that place all the time, because that describes this world. Again, we have several generations now that have had their minds saturated with humanism. Several generations. And with few exceptions, you sit down and you talk to some younger people, it's scary. It's really scary the way they think. It's a scary thing. But that's all they've heard all their lives is humanism. Well, they were raised in church. Yeah, if they were faithful, they were there 3 times a week. And then they were sent off to the schools and the universities of humanism. And then they sat down in their living room and watched it on TV for several hours. Their minds have been saturated with it. And they can't even think. They cannot even think in a Christian way. They've developed an appetite for Babylonian culture. You sit down and talk to, and again, there's exceptions. I'm not putting everybody in this class, so don't go from here and say, oh, Brother Dan said all young people are worthless. That's not what it said. But you sit down and talk to them about homosexuality. It's scary. It really is. It's scary how they classify it. And I'm getting off here. We need to move on. God's people may also find themselves in places and times of great sorrow. Babylon was a place of sorrow, a place of loneliness. In reference to this, we read in Psalm 137, verses 1 and 2, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hung our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. That's a picture of misery. That's a picture of gloom. That's a picture of depression. That's a picture of a loss of hope. And God's people may find themselves in a time or in a place of misery. You may find yourself in a time or a place of gloom or depression, or even a loss of hope. These are all places that a reminder that we can find ourselves at any time, in any one of these places. There isn't anyone exempt from any of these things. So as we pass through this world, there are going to be places, there are going to be times of difficulty. There are going to be times of great strain. There are going to be times of struggle. There are going to be times of great inconvenience. There are going to be times of agitation. There are going to be times. There isn't anything more agitating than sin. There's going to be times of opposition. There's going to be times of defeat and loneliness and disappointment. And there's going to be times where we are exposed to evil, where we are bombarded with evil. And there's going to be times of misery and gloom and depression and hopelessness. These are all some of the waters and rivers and fires and flames that we read of in Isaiah 43 and verse 2 that you and I must walk through. So we are reminded here in verse 16 of some of the places where we might find ourselves. But then we see in these places and in these times, we need to hear what God says. We need to hear the promises of God. None of these places, none of these times have an effect upon the person of God. None of them do. They do not diminish from God. They have no effect upon God's person. They have no effect upon the attributes of God. Notice in verse 16 the words although. Although. They occur twice, conveying the idea of even though or in spite of. Now something must always follow the word although. And what follows is, although I have cast them far off among the heathen, and although I have scattered them among the countries. Although, twice. But notice also, I have. We have that occurring twice too. Although I have. I have. Who's in control? God is. Although, you put anything you want after although, and then you have I have. God is in control. God is the authority. And that's what we're being reminded. That's what Judah is being reminded of here. Although they have been cast amongst the heathen, although they have been scattered amongst the countries, it is God that did it. God is the authority. God is in control. Babylon is not the authority. Nebuchadnezzar is not the authority. God is the authority. God is in control. Babylon's not in control. Obama is not in control. Humanism is not in control. God is in control. None of these things affect the person of God. We must always remember that. Now, everybody says, well, we know that, but very few act like it. Most people act as if God, they saw God's name in the obituary. That He just ceased to be. What are we going to do? It does not affect the person of God. So whatever comes after, although, does not affect the person of God. This is a fact. But then notice another word, and that is the word yet. Although, twice, yet, conveying the idea of nevertheless. That's a wonderful word. Never the less. Whatever comes after although, God is never the less. His person is not changed. The word yet means notwithstanding. It means however. So whatever the time, whatever the place, whatever the situation, whatever the circumstances that follow although, there is a yet. There is a yet. There is a yet concerning God. And God says here, although, again, insert whatever you want, yet will I be. I love those words. Yet will I be. Whatever the time, whatever the place, God will be. Who will He be? He will be who He has always been. He is the I am. That I am. Whatever is involved in our place, whatever is involved in our time, whatever changes occur in our places and in our time, we need to hear God say, yet will I be. Yet will I be the Most High. Yet will I be the Almighty. Is there anything that can happen that God is not going to be the Most High? Is there anything that can happen that is going to make God less than Almighty? Is there anything that can happen that is going to make God less than all-knowing? Is there anything that can happen that can change the fact that God reigns supreme and that He is the sustainer and that He is the unchanging one and the faithful one who has grace and mercy? He is again the I am that I am, and He says, yet will I be. Doesn't matter what happens. Yet will I be. You can be down as far as you can get in the hog pen. Yet will I be. Your life may be miserable, but God's person has not changed. Although, put again whatever you want behind it, although yet will I be. So that's a promise. But notice, it's personal. Yet will I be to them. Yet will I be to them. Now God could have just said, yet will I be. And that's encouraging. But He says more than that. Yet will I be to them. A little word to, preposition, speaking of a particular relationship between God and His people. He is saying, although they have been cast far off among the heathen, and although I have scattered them among the countries, yet will I be to them. To them. Again, it's personal. No matter where we are, when we fall, He will continue to always be the one who can lift us up. Nothing changes that. You and I can fall. You and I can have a terrible fall. But it still does not change the fact that God is the one who can lift you up. When we fail, He will be the one who continues to forgive us. When we are weak, He will be the one who can strengthen us. He will be the one who is able. Doesn't matter how weak we become, does not change the fact, yet will I be to them. I will be to them the one who can strengthen them. I will be to them the one who can lift them up. When we're broken, He will continue to be the one who can mend us. However broken we are, does not change the fact, yet will I be the one who can mend them. That's always so. When we're lost, yet will I be, says God, the one who knows the way. He's the one. Nothing changes that. No matter how far off you go and how lost you become in your wanderings, does not change God. He still knows the way. When we're afraid, yet will I be, says God, the one who can give courage. When we find ourselves in a battle, He will still be the one who can bring victory. He's the one. Yet will I be. When we stumble, yet will He be the one who can steady us. He not only can lift us up, He can steady us, He can keep us from falling. When we become blind, He continues to be the one who guides us. We may not be able to see a thing. Yet God says, yet will I be. I will be the one to you who can guide you. When we find ourselves face to face with persecutions, yet will I be, says God, the one who can shield you. When we have a problem, He is the one who has the solution. He is the one who is the solution. So you see, whatever our place, whatever our time, whatever our situation, whatever our circumstance, yet will I be. Whatever our need, yet He continues to be the one who can provide for our need. When we are overwhelmed and we cannot go much further, He continues to be the one who carries us. And on and on and on we can go. When we are in a storm, Yet will I be, says God, the one who can calm the storm. Yet will I be the one who, if I do not calm the storm, can bring you through the storm. Yet will I be. So from all of that, who do you think we ought to be seeking? The yet will I be. The yet will I be. He doesn't change. No matter how low we get, no matter where we find ourselves, we have this promise, yet will I be to them. To them. But notice also, it is a present reality. And this is what we've concentrated on the past in messages on this verse. Yet will I be to them as a little sanctuary. Yet will I be to them a something definite, something real has to follow. Yet will I be to them a little sanctuary. Speaks of reality. It speaks of something that is actual, not just imaginary. God isn't imaginary. God is actual. Now, a sanctuary is a special place. Yet will I be to them a special place. So who should we flee to? Yet will I be to them a special place. How many times God's people say, I don't have anyone to go to. Well, that's not so. That's never so. Yet will I be to them a special place. A sanctuary is a set-apart place. It is a place that is distinct from the ordinary. It is distinct from the although. Whatever follows the although, the sanctuary is separate from it. And God says, yet will I be to them. A sanctuary is an available place. It's a place of access. It's a place where we can enter. It's a place where we can hide. God says, yet will I be to them a sanctuary. That is, I will be a place where they can enter. I will be a place where they can hide. I will be available. And that's true no matter where we are. I will be to them. God's available. We need to flee to Him. We see also, sanctuary, of course, is a place of provision. It's a place of stillness. It's a place of rest. I will be to them, wherever they are. I will be to them a place where they can find stillness. I will be to them a place where they can find rest. Notice keep a mark there in Ezekiel, but turn to Isaiah 26. Isaiah 26, verse 20. Speaking of stillness, God being a place of stillness and rest. Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers. Shut thy doors about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment. And that's all time ever is, until the indignation be overpassed. God's people have a special place. That place is God. We read of it in Psalm 91, in verse 1, where we can dwell in God, no matter where we are. God. Yet will I be to them a special place, a place where they can find stillness, a place where they can find rest, a place where they can find mercy, a place where they can find communion with God. A sanctuary is a place of revelation. There is a place. God is a place where we can find revelation. We can be in the midst of the worst storm we've ever been in. And God says, yet will I be to them. In the midst of that storm, a little sanctuary, a place where they can have revealed to them truths. And it's these things that give us that stillness and rest. So no matter what follows, although, there's always God. There is the reality of God. There is always God, and He is a place of refuge. He has provided Himself. He is a place where we can find stillness and rest. He's a place where we can find mercy. He's a place where we can find cleansing. He's a place where we find communion with God. He's the place where we find revelation. And then notice lastly, this is an all-encompassing promise. Yet will I be to them as a little sanctuary. And then notice what it says. In the countries. Remember, they were scattered amongst the countries. In the countries where they shall come. We do not know the places that we must come. We do not know the places where we might end up. But be sure of this. Yet will I be in the countries where they shall come. I will be where they are. Yet will I be in the countries where they shall come. So wherever I am, God will be who He is. That's comforting. So wherever I am, seems to me that I ought to seek Him. Seems to me that I ought to trust Him. Seems to me that I ought to lean upon Him. Because He doesn't change. Yet will I be in the countries where they shall come. God never, ever loses track of where we are. Never. We may lose track of God, but He never loses track of us. And as a reminder, He says, yet will I be to them in the countries where they shall come. He knows where we're going to be, and He's there before we get there. Before we have to pass through any rivers, any floods, any flames, any fires, He's already there. Before we're cast into any furnace, He's already there. He doesn't come after we're there. He meets us there. If we have any awareness at all about God, He meets us there. So what God is saying here, yet will I be to them a little sanctuary in the countries where they shall come. Wherever they are, I will be there. And I will be God. And I will be a sanctuary to them. It's as if God said, I will be a traveling sanctuary to them. I will be a sanctuary to them wherever they be. To each one of them. I will be a little sanctuary. Wherever they are. Wherever they are. I will be a place of refuge. Now you have to flee to that place. But God is there as a place of refuge wherever we are. Whatever we experience, God is a refuge. And we need to flee to Him. He is a place where we can dwell. A place where we can hide. A place where we can abide. The psalmist prayed in Psalm 71 in verse 3, be thou my strong habitation wherein I may continually resort. Where I may continually resort. Where I may continually turn to. And that's always so. We do not have to resort to the times in which we live. He is our resort. We do not have to resort to the places where we might find ourselves. We can resort to God. So again, we need to hear Him say, although, put again whatever you want on the other side of although, yet will I be to them a little sanctuary in the countries where they shall come. So in light of what is said in verse 16, wherever and in whatever you may find yourself, there's always God. There's always God. It's amazing how many people forget that. There is always God. Look to Him. Focus upon Him. Wherever you are. Whether it be a pleasant place, whether it be a miserable place. Focus upon God. Pursue Him. Draw near to Him. Lean upon Him. Draw from Him. Because He doesn't change. Yet will I be. Yet will I be to them. He's available. We need to avail ourselves. Again, we need to flee to God. You'll never find happiness fleeing from God. Never. That's not where happiness is found. You'll find happiness getting to God. Yet will I be. And He's in wherever we are. He's there. We have to flee to Him. So verse 16, there's a lot of comfort found in that verse. A lot to be thankful for. But always remember those words. Four words. Yet will I be. Yet will I be. No matter what happens, hear God saying, yet will I be. Not only yet will I be, I'll be where you are, and I'll be to you what you need. Yet will I be. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us verse song.